There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve. Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 783, March 11th. 2019, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say clock is ticking, heads are rolling, and pretty soon cars in the park will be racing.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, well, it looks like it's up in the air. Toro Rosso could be better than Red Bull. Citroën wins in Mexico. And we have a special interview this week with IndyCar race driver Max Chilton. And, of course, I need to remind you that we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, sir, thank you very much. I am very, very excited. Motorsports March Madness is here. Past weekend, we had the race in St. Pete to start the IndyCar season. Next weekend, we have Sebring 12 Hours and the 800-pound gorilla of motorsports, Grand Prix Motor Racing from Melbourne, Australia.
Yep, and let's not forget the most nervous gorilla in the room. His name is Mr. and Mrs. Honda.
Mr. and Mrs. Honda?
Yep.
Well, let's see what kind of grunts in Melbourne. But you know what is interesting? I don't know if I should use that word, but intriguing. The season has not even started, and we already have the first. The Teflon lady has shown the door to Paddy and told him to slip out the back jack. Now, what is interesting is the party line that he is on leave of absence, but looks like his goose is cooked and his dishes are done at Williams, exito of Paddy Lowe.
I mean, he had no effect. He did nothing. What he was supposed to do was turn the team around, and all he did was increase their expenses on fine champagne and caviar.
Yeah, let's see what happens. And, you know, it's interesting how this thing works out in life sometimes, and definitely in Formula One. Paddy Lowe is the man who was brought in at Mercedes at the expense of Ross Brawn. I mean, and Ross Brawn, if you listen to his interviews on other podcasts, he was very unhappy how he was pushed outside out of that program, and so they can bring, they meaning Nicky and Toto, Paddy Lowe. And, you know, 3 years ago, Paddy was at a team that was at the top of the heap, and at the end of last year, he was at a team that was bottom of the barrel and slowly rolling into the Grand Prix graveyard to join the likes of Brabham, Lotus, Jordan, Tyrrell, and many others. And, you know, interestingly, people have been leaving both from Williams and McLaren. Last year, another high-profile person, and this guy is very well-known, the aerodynamicist Dirk de Beer, he left Williams. What will they do now? I really don't know. But I think they should bring back somebody with a lot of experience who can hire the right people and put this mark on track. What say you?
Yeah, I think they're in trouble. I don't know. I don't see them coming on track for a long, long time. I think Claire needs to go. I think Frank needs to sell the team. I think they need a big, huge influx of cash. And, I mean, their engineering department that does other things on the other side of the fence is great. But Williams, as we know it, is never going to come back like they did, you know, in the 90s. It's over.
You know, we were wrong when we were thinking last year they cannot go any lower, but I think they might surprise us, unfortunately, this year.
And the surprise is they're lower with a Mercedes motor.
Yeah, that's also very amazing. You know, if I was in Claire's Balmond shoes, I would reach out to Patrick Head or Dave Richards of Pro Drive to get the team back in top gear. This team really needs a, what I would call a Vince Lombardi moment. You cannot run a Formula One team with all the piranhas that are in the pool, headed by a family member, be it my boy Lollipop or my pretty ballerina. So I think they need to bring in some heavy-duty people.
They do. And a lot of heavy-duty people need to leave the team because it's just, it's going backwards every year.
Yeah. And you know, when I was at the U.S. Grand Prix last year, I was told by a very, very reliable source that Frank Williams is suffering from dementia. And, you know, he's up there in age also, plus, you know, the serious accident he had. So if Claire is making the final decision on important issues, then that is a very heavy load on her shoulders. And as they say in a song from Mr. Leo Sayer, one of your favorites, it's not easy when the road is your driver. Just like Zak Brown at McLaren, she is not designing the car, but I think she needs some help.
Absolutely. It would be nice if her husband gave her a hand.
I don't even know who her husband is.
He's some freak somewhere.
You sure on this now?
I'm positive.
Okay, let me just give you a word of advice. Williams do have very good lawyers, so watch out. Keep an eye on your email.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, but we live in a free country.
Yes.
Thank you.
And you're going to make F1 Weekly great again.
I was wearing that hat just a minute ago.
Very good. Okay, shall we move from negativity to positivity?
You mean you're going to talk about Fernando?
Who?
Only the lonely.
Yeah, the sports car driver?
Yeah.
I'm going to start calling him. What shall we call him? Who's the big sports car driver? Brian Redmond, Josephert, no, Nando is Nando, one of the all-time greats. And but, you know, people come and go, and so has he left a big, big impression in the world of Formula One and other sports, and I will be looking forward to him at Indy 500. He's on it.
Boogity, boogity, boogity.
Yes. But, you know, going into the Australian Grand Prix, positive and red hot is the Ferrari team and their two very hungry drivers. Sebastian hungry for his fifth and first championship with Ferrari, while new boy Leclerc hungry and eager for his first pole, first GP victory, and perhaps, hopefully, very hopefully, first taste of cage rattling. And that's what I'm really looking forward to. But Mr. Rogers, as we are getting closer and closer to Sunday, race day, I have a feeling we will have two red cars on the front row in Melbourne with Sebastian on pole. Lewis will be there, a Honda-powered Red Bull among the top four on the grid. That will make for a great race. What's your take on the season opener?
You ready?
Si, senor. Fernando.
Well, in my virtual reality, Fernando is on pole. But in the real world, I hate to say this, but I predict that Toro Rosso is going to out-qualify Red Bull.
Alexander Albon is going to out-qualify Max Verstappen?
Yes. And they will be crying. The actually, qualifying in Melbourne, it will be sponsored by Kleenex.
Did you just inherit a let's just put it this way, a green farm?
Indeed. Indeed, we call it CBD.
Yes, very good, very true. That's what happens. Why do you say that? I'm curious.
Because I just have a funny feeling that Toro Rosso, Honda has done a really good job with Toro Rosso, and Toro Rosso has got it together.
We will see, we will see. But things are looking very positive for Honda. I mean, very positive compared to where they were 2 years ago. We won't even talk about 3 years ago. Now, you remember Heinz Harald Frentzen?
Yes, he used to date Schumacher's wife.
That is very true, sir. Ferrari are ready to win the 2019 championship. On the other hand, ex-Swiss F1 driver Mark Schurer thinks Ferrari has some reliability issues, but are slightly ahead of Mercedes in terms of pace. Now, we all know what the top teams from last year were, and the top teams were scenery is pretty much the same at the top of the heap, you know. But this magazine, autosport.com, that's, of course, their website. I've been reading this magazine, Mr. Rogers, since the 1970s. Fantastic magazine. They have a nice, they put out regularly videos on YouTube. They're experts. They have rated the top 10 teams. Of course, like I said, no surprise at the top, no surprise at the bottom. And so we will just look at the how they rated the bottom five teams. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready for some football.
Yes. Well, I don't have to say who was number 10, of course, and her gang, you know. McLaren was rated 9th after the reality where they discovered Honda was not their only problem. But I think McLaren will move up the ranking as the season progresses, and I expect them to do even better next season with input from James Key, who is joining the team this month. And also this guy from Porsche's very successful sports car program, Andreas Seidel. Let me ask you a question. Do you think, I don't think McLaren will win a race. Do you think they will get a podium?
No, simply because with Ricciardo at Renault, it's going to be tough cookies for them.
Do you think their new rookie, Lando Norris, will outscore and outrace Carlito?
It's tough. He could by midseason.
Yeah, man, if he outscores Carlos Sainz Jr., then if Lando, this is my prediction, if Lando Norris outscores Carlos at the end of the season, then I think the younger Spaniard will be moving from McLaren, or at least from his seat, to make room for an older Spaniard. You know who I'm talking about.
No, that's not going to happen.
I think the McLaren car gets competitive where they can punch in the top five on a regular basis with Carlito and Lando Norris. I can see Nando coming back.
Nando, el más macho del mundo?
Yes, sir. Okay, so Racing Point was rated 8. This team has done a very good job past few seasons, especially given the resources available. Number 8 ranking may seem low for them, but it's based on performance in preseason testing and not yesterday's hits. You know, a couple of years ago, they were doing very well, but last year was not a very good season by their standards. A lot of it has to do with, you know, as always, money. So I think this year they will do well. And the real battle is if Daddy's little helper can outscore Sergio.
No, he's way down. He's got too much money in his pockets.
We'll have more money by not racing.
Yeah.
So where is the motivation coming from? That's what I want to know.
It's just fake news.
Okay. Toro Rosso, your new favorite team, is ranked 7th. They have an exciting rookie in Alexander Albon and a returning torpedo. I hope they give Daniel Kvyat time to settle in and not expect him to be the Max Verstappen of Moscow, even though he's from a town called Ufa in Russia. Like Kvyat, Albon used to be in the Red Bull program, but was dropped way before he got anywhere near Formula One. Now he has the opportunity of a lifetime to make some serious fat pie. How do you think the battle will develop between these two returning Red Bull rejects?
Well, I think Albon's going to be ordering L10 in the middle of the season.
L10 was your favorite, which was all veggie, right?
Correct.
Okay, that's interesting. But who will get the Thai coconut ice cream with Dr. Marco cherry on top?
That will be Kvyat. Kvyat's going to surprise everybody. He's going to be settled down, more mature, and he's going to leave the torpedo unarmed in the garage.
Yeah, you know, talking of torpedo, one guy who needs to keep an eye on his hull is Pierre Gasly, because I saw a comment from Christian Horner that following his two crashes in preseason testing, that Pierre Gasly is keeping Red Bull very busy. Okay, and because of that, Max missed some test time on the track. So I think the focus is going to be very much on Pierre Gasly. And if he tries too hard and crash in a few races, remember when Antonio Giovinazzi came at so much hype, he did so much good in qualifying and then crashed in the race?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want Pierre Gasly to just think that he has to outrace Max first weekend, first race, second race. Like, a better idea would be to pace himself and catch up to him slowly. Otherwise, you know, if he does not do well and Kvyat does well, the torpedo may be moved up to the mothership next season. You never know.
It's very possible. The problem with Gasly is he is nervous. And every time he sees Max Verstappen, all he sees is a testicle. So it's going to be a problem.
Hanging out the cockpit, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say this. I know some driver who tested a Brabham Formula One car and Keshkesh Estoril in 1986, I believe it was. And his comment about Ayrton Senna was that he had such big balls, they were hanging out of the car.
I told you, I don't make this stuff up, Nass.
No, you are the genius. You is a genius, Clark. Completing the bottom, top of the bottom was Alfa Romeo, previously known as Sauber. And this is basically now Ferrari's version of Toro Rosso. They have a driver who made his Grand Prix debut with them way back in 2001. I'm very happy to see an Italian driver on the grid. But, you know, Antonio must prevail over his teammate, who is the oldest driver on the grid, to have any chance of Formula One beyond 2019. And talking of Ferrari's version of Toro Rosso, I want to ask you this question. Renault, they are not happy with the emergence of these big teams. And if this trend continues, Renault may walk away from Formula One.
Well, they could. I think they're under contract until 2021. And let's not forget, we stopped talking about it, but this Carlos Ghosn thing has to have some impact on the whole world of the automotive industry a little bit. But I think Ricciardo does bring a lot of motivation to the team. And I'm telling you, I think they're going to be threatening.
Everybody is threatening, you know, that's the problem.
That's not the problem. That's what we want.
Yeah, you know, there was an article on pitpass.com. I just saw it today about Red Bull making threats that they may also leave because, you know, they're trying to bring in new changes, and it all really boils down to money. You know, if you reduce Red Bull's income by $30 million, that would be good enough reason for them to walk away. But if you give them $30 million more than they received last year, they will stay in Formula One even if they have five wheels. You know what I'm saying?
I understand. And if we lose a manufacturer in the next couple of years, Formula One itself is in trouble.
No, you know, if not all these teams are going to stay forever. I will not be surprised. You know, Mercedes is starting a Formula E team, and Renault is not going to stay there forever. But, you know, for every departure, there will be new arrivals. So, Mercedes leaves, I will not be surprised if that team is sold to Toto Wolff. I will not be surprised at all.
For $1.
Yeah, exactly. Plus a commitment to pay the salaries for everybody for 12 months.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
And it's the same thing. The Renault team in the same area has changed hands many times. So, you know, other team will come up.
I agree. Everything has its limits.
Yes. Now, who knows? I mean, if they do a cap, you know, budget cap and things make sense, I can see, you know, one of the Audi brand, Volkswagen, Volkswagen brand, Audi, Porsche come in, Toyota can come back. You never know.
Maybe we could get back Bugatti, Gordini.
You know, Bugatti is also owned by Volkswagen Group, right, if I'm not mistaken?
Correct.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if they bring Bugatti name back and paint the cars blue?
You mean, you're trying to make me cry, aren't you?
No, I mean, I love that blue Bugatti, you know, Type 33 or whatever it was.
Yeah, machismo.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No question about it. Well, we'll see. I'm very happy the Alfa Romeo name is back, and I do miss Carlo Kitty. I don't know. I'm sure you know who Carlo Kitty was.
Yes.
He was quite a character, you know.
Well, we could always bring back Ligier, Gitane.
There you go. Yeah, you know, some. I would love to see the early 1980s Renault colors on the Renault right now. That will look so beautiful. And especially with Alain Prost being, you know, part of the project, it will be. And maybe they can bring René Arnoux as the water carrier.
Bravissimo, bravissimo. Keep up the good work, Nass. I love it. Why don't we bring on this week's special interview? Of course, you were at St. Pete this past weekend.
Yes, and my thanks to Mr. Steve Bidlack, giving us the in charge of blessing us with a media pass, so that makes life very easy. And, you know, what happened is, I don't want to sound negative, but I was going to work on Saturday, so I did not try to set up any interviews on Saturday. And then late Friday, my boss tells me, we're not working Saturday. So it kind of threw things off. But, you know, we did what we could. So we got a few interviews. And today we will have an interview with Max Chilton, and of course his brother also races in the British Touring Car Championship. And you know, I remember Max from way back many years ago when he came into British F3. He was very, very young, and he's been around racing for a long time, and obviously raced in Formula One. So we discussed about IndyCar, Indy 500, IndyCars, Formula One, and I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation with a chap from Surrey.
Okay, folks, I'm here with Max Chilton. Max, how are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. Now, a couple of years ago, Mr. Alonso grabbed the headlines at the Indy 500, but you also led that race. Tell us about the experience and excitement of leading the biggest race in the world.
Yeah, it's no question. It's a huge race. I've been fortunate enough to race in the Monaco Grand Prix, Le Mans 24 Hours, and the Indianapolis 500. And the best year for me was 2017, the year Fernando was actually leading the race. I had a really bad start, but managed to get myself back into the lead. I was dead last and ended up leading it. And I led it for more laps than anyone else. I led it for 50 laps. Came very close to winning it. So I feel like I've tasted what a victory feels like a little bit, but not the fun part of it. So I want to hopefully win that race one day. This is another year where we've got a chance. Fernando's coming back to do it, which is exciting. And so hopefully I can pour that milk over me.
Honestly, when you were leading, were you feeling the pressure, man, this is the greatest race in the world, or was it just another event?
It did feel just like another race. At the end of the day, you're a racing driver, you can only do what you can do, and I was pushing as hard as I could, and I did a good job from never experiencing leading that race to leading it for 50 laps. I thought it was very, very good. With hindsight now, with experience, there's probably things I could have done to try and extend how many laps I led and maybe won the race, but you speak to a racing driver that hasn't been in a position where they thought, oh, if I knew that now, that's just part of racing. So we'll learn from that and hopefully come back stronger this year.
Okay. Adjusting to oval racing, was that a big challenge for you, or did it come naturally?
It didn't come naturally. It suits my driving style, which is smooth. You can't be erratic on an oval, otherwise you just end up in the wall. So it suits my driving style, but it doesn't suit my way of approaching a racetrack. So I've had to sort of step back a few times and analyse the way I approach things. I've had help from like Dario Franchitti, who said it wasn't natural for him for 3 or 4 years, but he finally sort of found a way around it. That's probably the biggest challenge coming from Formula One is on an oval. So it's going to be exciting to see how Marcus gets on this year coming from Formula One and never driving an oval. So we'll see how he gets on.
This is your fourth season in IndyCar season, in IndyCar racing. What are your expectations for race wins and championship fight?
Yeah, this year we're it's critical we get some podiums or race wins, not just for myself, but for the team and the sponsors to make this project continue. So there's pressure on, but pressure makes diamonds.
The series has a good variety of tracks, from short ovals to Indy and Pocono, and from street circuits to Road America. Any particular type of track you enjoy more, and what track is the biggest challenge for car setup?
I personally prefer the road and street. That's just what I was brought up on. Ovals to me are still a bit alien. I think Indy's is a real spectacle. I don't particularly enjoy the other ovals, but it's obviously part of the championship. I'd say the hardest track to get your setup right is Indy. You know, it changes from not just one morning to the next, it changes from like one run to the next with the wind. If the wind changes, you've got to change your setup. So when you're doing those speeds, you're on the edge of grip, so you've got to make sure everything's just perfect. So that's probably the hardest place to get the setup right.
Now, your American racing experience started with Indy Lights. What was your first impression of American racing culture and fans?
I love racing in America. My first experience was 2007 out here. I raced in a thing called Star Mazda, which then became Pro Mazda, and I think is now called Indy Pro or Pro Indy. I get confused. But it's a long time ago. I've been racing out here for 12 years on and off. And I think everyone's very friendly. They're all here for enjoying, and they enjoy the sport. I came from Formula One, where I think sometimes people forget that they enjoy racing. They get so sort of wrapped up in the pressures of it, they don't sort of just step back and enjoy the moment of racing, which is the reason they got into the sport in the first place. So I think it's very enjoyable over here.
Now, you know, I have to ask you this thing. When you guys went with drivers meeting with Charlie Whiting and other, you know, things that were not televised, did Kimi Raikkonen ever ask a question or say anything?
He definitely did in driver's briefings. He definitely piped up, and he wouldn't ask a question, but he would probably argue a decision and go, I don't agree with that. But yeah, he was vocal for sure.
Okay, now what American track is closest to a European track, and your thoughts on the wonderful Grand Prix circuit we have in Austin?
Say that question again, sorry.
What American track is closest to a European track, and what are your thoughts on the Circuit of America circuit track in Austin?
Austin is obviously the nearest to Formula One track because it's Tilke designed, and a lot of the tracks are locked that way. But the old school Formula One tracks like Spa, which are my favorite track, is quite similar to Watkins Glen or Road America. I think Road America is fantastic. Watkins Glen's probably my favourite, but we don't get to race there anymore. But it's fast, it's flowing, it's just like Spa or Monza. So it's a great track.
In days gone by, IndyCars raced at Brands Hatch and Rockingham. Would you like to see an IndyCar race at Donington or Alton Park or some other circuit in England?
Yeah, I think Donington would probably be the best bet. Alton was probably a bit too fiddly, and I couldn't see much overtaking happening there. Brands Hatch would work, and they've raced there before. I think it was a good 10, 15, 20 years ago. I remember watching, I think it was Bordeaux when the race. Paul Tracy was racing at the time. It was Champ Car. So I'd love to have a home race. I live very, very close to Brands Hatch. It would be fantastic to have a, you know, 200-lap race around Brands Indy. That would be amazing.
Yeah, you know, Brands Hatch was the first track I ever went to in my life in 1982. Where are you from in Kent?
So I'm in Surrey, which is Reigate in Surrey, which is 35 minutes from Brands Hatch. And I've had race wins there in British F3, T cars. I really enjoy that place.
So did you take the Dartford Tunnel to get there?
No, so I'm south, so I didn't take the tunnel. Sometimes I have to take the tunnel to go north, to go to tracks like Snetterton and Donington and stuff like that. But yeah, Brands Hatch is an easy M25 from my house to the track.
Yeah, very nice. Okay, your time in Formula One, what stands out for you traveling the globe and racing against some of the greatest names in motor racing?
My favourite parts of racing is meeting the fans, the people. Everyone's there to enjoy the sport. Obviously, it's best when you win. And I always say to people, racing's got a lot of lows for very little highs, but the highs make it worth it. So I'll keep pushing to get some more success.
Okay. Based on your experience on both sides of the pond, is it worth racing in Formula One at any cost and any team, or is it a better idea to make a professional career here in IndyCar racing?
Well, that is a tough question. I think you never want to turn down the opportunity of driving in Formula One, because it is the pinnacle of motorsport, in my opinion. But you look at drivers like Scott Dixon, who's 5-time champion, he's as good as any Formula One driver, in my opinion. He's had a great career, he's had a long career, and he hasn't gone to Formula One. So I think, I don't think it's a bad decision to go either way. At the end of the day, if you've gone into Formula One, it then has sometimes opens up doors to go into other championships. So I would probably never turn it down if you'd never been there. But for me, who's been there, I would probably turn down going to a back running car, because IndyCar gives me a lot more opportunities.
You know, Brian Herta once tested a Minardi, and his comment was, the worst Formula One car is better than the best Indy car that he has ever driven. What's your thought?
Yeah, obviously Formula One are leaps and bounds ahead of, you know, the price and the speed. They've got so much huge budgets. The cars are a different level of speed, which is understandable because of the budgets, but there is nothing like driving a Formula One car. They are so advanced. I think Austin, where we're going this year, they're 14 seconds a lap quicker than us. That's considerably faster, but it doesn't mean the racing's any better.
Okay, now, Formula One season is starting soon. Question, at the end of the season, number 6 for Lewis, number 5 for Seb, or number 1 for Mad Max? Who's claiming he's not mad anymore?
I'm probably going to go for Lewis. Yeah.
Just because you're a Brit, or based on performance?
I think Ferrari's going to be just as quick this year, and I'd love to see Ferrari win again. but I think Mercedes has just got that real, they're having the run that Red Bull had, and it's pretty hard to make them stop.
Okay, we're running out of time. How about a message to our listeners? We have listeners all over the world and quite a few in Britain also.
Yeah, so thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you've got any other questions which weren't asked today, then just ask me on Twitter at Max Chilson or Instagram, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
And finally, one request. Can you say, hi, I'm Max Chilton, and you're listening to F1 Weekly?
Hi, I'm Max Chilton, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Thank you, sir.
Max, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. We'll see you at the racetrack.
Yeah, he's a very nice guy, very friendly, and my thanks to him. And he asked me if I was coming to other races also. So I told him I'll be at the Indy 500, and hopefully we'll have a cup of tea with him.
Jolly good, jolly good. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back with MM after these brief messages.
Are you in business and want to make a hard-hitting visual impact that gets your name and message promoted? F1 Weekly knows from experience that the creative team of Caton Designs are graphic design geniuses and a company that can give your brand a visual pop in a cost-effective way. Contact Caton Designs at ketondesigns.com for visual messaging solutions that get your business image seen.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. And now it's time for Motorsports Mondial as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial with the guru, the sultan of motorsports, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And I have to say, our satellite is right over Melbourne right now, giving us images of things that will be happening in a few days. Very, very, very happy, sir. Very excited. The only thing is, I think the race will start at 1 o'clock in the morning, FLA time, but I will be up and watching it. It will be like 10 o'clock your time, I believe.
I believe it will be 10 o'clock my time. I will be up and watching.
Yes, you get an extra shrimp on the barbie with some Foster's beer, and life will be good.
Yep.
Okay, sir, back to reality. We start today's Motorsports Mondial with MotoGP under the Arabian Night, the Grand Prix of Qatar. What a doozy delivered by Doby on a Ducati. In a repeat of last year's race, both Andrea Dovizioso and Marc Marquez traded places on the final lap, with the Italian sneaking through on the final corner of the, of course, final lap for a thrilling and a very, very close finish. Third place on the podium was decided in similar fashion in favor of Cal Crutchlow over Alex Rins. The doctor, Valentino Rossi, started 14th and 5th, amazingly less than half a second behind race winner. His Spanish teammate, Maverick Viñales, started the season opener from pole position and finished 7th. Now, the big battle that was expected between Honda riders Marc Marquez and Jorge Lorenzo was over before it even started, after Lorenzo crashed in qualifying on Saturday. So that was a missed opportunity. Round 2 will be in Argentina on March 31st, and then the MotoGP circus will come to Austin, Texas for Round 3 on April 14th. I'm very sad that they no longer race the MotoGP bikes at Laguna Seca.
Yes, it's all about the dollar.
Talking of Laguna Seca, will you go? I know you're going to the Monterey Historic, but will you go to the IndyCar? The season finale is at Laguna Seca.
If I'm physically capable, I will.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. You know, I haven't been to Cali. I think the last time I was there was like 2015, I believe, or 2014. So it's been a while. I will see, you know, what I can do. Maybe I can jet over for the weekend.
And you might be able to bring me those Ferrari sunglasses.
No, they are actually in California with my nephew.
I understand that. He's using them every day.
No, he said if he finds them, he will call me and then I will call you. So, you know, they've been traveling to you since Kuala Lumpur since 2012. I assure you one day they will make it to your house.
Bravissimo, bravissimo.
Okay, sir, now we move on to IndyCar racing. Their season opener takes place on the streets of St. Petersburg, across the water from Tampa, and only a 20-minute drive for Moore. The weekend was a Penske performance package. Their Australian driver, Will Power, took his 8th pole position at the circuit. Very impressive. With teammate from Tennessee, Joseph Newgarden, sharing the front row with him. Clever tire strategy gave victory to Newgarden. And I had I got to say hello to Robert Wickens. He was there. He's in very good shape now. He was signing autographs. It was very nice to see him. And last year, he almost won the race on his debut. So all the good wishes to Robert Wickens, and hopefully he will be back in a race car soon, which is what he's also wanting. Scott Dixon from New Zealand was second for Chip Ganassi Racing, with Power finishing third. Very impressive IndyCar debut for Felix Rosenqvist of Sweden. He was fourth, and he is also part of the Ganassi stable. He also led the race for some time. Did you watch any of this race on TV, Senor?
See, I did.
Okay, that's good. Did you enjoy it? So the cars are very beautiful.
Very nice cars, more simplistic than F1. I was bummed about Sebastian Bourdais having reliability issues. It was very good, and boy, those two cars hitting the one car hitting the wall and the following car hitting their rear tire was pretty brutal. But exciting racing. I love it.
Yeah, and then the sound of these engines is very good, too.
Honda
and Chevrolet. And St. Petersburg is a very nice town, man. I remember when I was in California, I was watching many years ago, they were showing an aerial view of the race, and I'm not making this up. My initial thought was, this is where they should have the U.S. Grand Prix. Very nice town, very nice area. You should come by someday, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so where are we now? In terms of interviews, I was able to do two with IndyCar drivers. One of them we already heard with Max Chilton. The other one coming soon will be with Jack Harvey. He was a British Formula 3 champion, and we've been following his career since his Formula BMW days. One very interesting conversation I had, and this interview is also coming up, is with team owner, both in Indy Lights and Indy Cars, and also now in sports cars, Ricardo Juncos. He's from Argentina. Very interesting story there. So we talked about Carlos Reutemann and Juan Manuel Fangio's nephew. He knows very well. Do you remember meeting him at Laguna Seca some years ago?
I do indeed.
Yeah, it was a good time. And so when we finished the interview, I asked him, where are you based? Because he used to live in Florida, Miami area. He says now he's in Indianapolis. And he says to me, if you ever come there, let me know. We'll go out for dinner. So I'm looking for some Argentine steak in Indianapolis one of these days. That should be fun.
Extra fun.
Yes, sir. Okay, so, and then we go to the GP2, the Happy Dolls of IndyCar Racing, which would be Indy Lights. They also had their season opener in St. Pete. Canadian Zachary Clement, he used to be known as Zachary Clement DiMello, but now he's known as Zachary Clement, was the winner of the first race on Saturday. Second race of the weekend was won by young Dutch driver Rinus Wicke, and we have an interview with him coming up soon, and he's the one who drives for Senior Ricardo Juncos' team, Juncos Racing as it is called here in the Indy Lights. Remember when Sebastian Loeb used to win rallies, you used to say the competition got lobed?
Yes.
I think these days the competition is getting Ogier'd, if that is a word. The Mexican rally was won by Sebastian Ogier, your homeboy, in a Citroën. So very good. Interestingly, four different makes in the top four. Second was Ott Tänak, I believe he's from Estonia, for Toyota. Elfyn Evans from UK was third in a Ford Fiesta. And fourth was Thierry Neuville for Hyundai. And I believe Thierry Neuville is from Belgium. You would know that since you are Francais speaking. Oh, now, Formula E in the streets of Hong Kong. One of our favorites, Sam Bird, won the race, at least on the track. This was in Hong Kong. But the win was plucked from him for colliding with race leader. And I think he had some other argy-bargy also. So he got the penalty, and Eduardo Mortara became the new race winner. So congratulations to Mr. Mortara, who also has won, I believe, the Macau race like three times, twice in the machinery and once or twice also in the GT cars. So I'm happy to see Stoffel do well because, I was a huge fan of his because he won anything and everything under Formula One. And then when he got there, the first thing Alonso gave him. Alonso gave him a can of paella, but before that he said, you know, here's a CD, why don't you listen to it? It might come in handy. You know what that CD was?
Who is a man that would risk his neck for his brother, man? Can you dig it?
That's what he thought. That's the way it goes sometimes in life. Okay, sir, next weekend we have the Sebring 12 Hours on Saturday. And prior to that, we have the World Endurance Championship race. And Clark, I was going to take Thursday off, but because of staff shortages, they told me no can do. So there goes a opportunity, and maybe fleeting opportunity to interview with Nando. And talking of Nando, let me just tell you something. You probably heard the news that McLaren will enter Nando at Indy using the technical services of Carlin Motorsport. You heard that, right?
Yep.
Now, Trevor Carlin and his wife, Stephanie, I've known these people for many years. Our paths have crossed many times, tracks here, tracks in UK. And, you know, we've interviewed Trevor Carlin a few times. And Peter Brazier and Mr. Philip Tagler arranged a trip to his racing shop some years ago. So, you know, we have a good media relationship with championship with them. So it's all very good. So I asked his wife, Stephanie, I said, you know, you are the person who can make my biggest wish in interviewing possibilities come true and get me 10 minutes with Alonso at Indy. She goes, are you kidding me? I says, why? She says, oh, McLaren controls that so diligently and so thoroughly that she said, we can't do anything. So I will see. The problem is, you know, I'm going to be there only Saturday, Sunday. Sunday's out of the question, but I don't think I'll be able to get a 10-minute slot with Nando at the biggest race in the world. So we'll keep trying, you know. What I'm really thinking of doing, you know, go to a World Endurance Championship race on a Thursday or a Friday. And maybe a lot of Formula One people there, as you know.
Indeed.
Yeah, so we will see, you know, what we can do. But anyway, so what I was going to say is this. Before you ask me for my prediction for Australia, which I'm surprised you have not yet, let me just say this could be a day of Doris Day. Hey, Sarah, Sarah, whatever will be. But I'll tell you what I'm hoping to see, which will be very exciting for all the racing fans. On the podium, a driver from a red car and a driver from a silver car. And third man on the podium, I would love to see one of these two. Either Max Verstappen or local lad, now in a Renault, Daniel Ricciardo. What say you?
Well, I say I don't want a silver car on the podium. I hope they done blow up. But it would be nice to see Renault on the podium or Max Factor on the podium or Ferrari on the podium or Fernando on the podium.
Yes. Now, are you ready for famous last words? Man, I read this, and I don't know, maybe they're selling big green farms in Finland also. So check this out. Today, these famous words come from the wingman. He was speaking at a Mercedes function in Turin, Italy, and this is what he said about the post-2018 season. So I've just shortened this thing, but these are his words. And I quote, I got to Finland, got properly smashed a few times. I also traveled to South America. When I came back, I decided that I'm going to beat everyone this year. End of quote. Now, I have a question for you, Mr. Rogers. Why am I thinking Jean Alesi?
That's it. That was actually Jean Alesi. He was wearing a Rubotas mask.
Maybe that's why he went to South America to meet Rubinho.
Exactly. Rubinho, Rubinho is always Rubinho.
No, I was thinking Jean Alesi for the usual new motivation.
Yes. You know, I like Bottas. He'll make some podiums, but it is what it is.
No, I wish him well. I wish everybody all the best. But you know, the task he has to become world champion, he has to beat his teammate, which is no easy task. And I wonder if he remembers that Lewis's teammate had a 43-point lead. And Lewis was able to grab that and run with it till he had a done blowed up in Malaysia. And then he has to fight. If he passes that test, then he has to deal with Sebastian Vettel. And I'm most probably Sebastian Vettel will say, why don't you deal with my rookie teammate first, then I'll see you. I'll see you at Hockenheim.
I don't know. But you know what? I'm not going to feel sorry for Bottas. He makes millions of dollars. number two is not that bad.
Or number two, to Schumacher, Senna, or Prost, or Lewis Hamilton, or Sebastian Vettel. There's no shame in that, that's for sure.
And don't forget, he could be number six. Just ask the prisoner.
There you go, Rogers.
Thank you.
One bar above the rest.
Bravissimo. So there you have it. I predict that Renault is going to surprise, surprise, surprise.
And have a double DNF? Is that what you're trying to say?
No.
I am really expecting Sebastian Vettel to win this race.
I know you are, but I'm a more of a realist. Ricciardo's going to win, and Max is going to be mad.
Who do you think will be the first new Grand Prix winner?
New? Ooh.
Winner in 2019. I predict Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, Charles Leclerc could be. Or Hulkenberg.
You know, the thing is, whoever gets on the podium with Renault would be fantastic.
I agree. It'll show the people. It'll make Christian Horner so happy.
Oh, man, talking of Christian Horner, I was thinking if, it's a big if, Max Verstappen becomes world champion, how would people at McLaren feel?
Devastated.
Yes.
And that's not going to happen, my friend. I'm telling you, this Honda thing is way out of proportion.
Oh, you know, Dr. Marco has predicted, actually, this website, ItaliaRacing.net, they are quoting, I think it's that website or the French website, calling Dr. Marco the prophet because he has given we're going to win minimum five races.
Yeah. Those big green markets are everywhere.
Yes, that's what it looks like. Well, there's a lot of green in Austria anyway. But I had doubts about you in California when you went cuckoo earlier in the show.
Cuckoo! Keep up the good work, Nass. I love it. I'll see you on the television at Melbourne. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Man, but no one understands him but his woman.
John Jack.